y'all keep opening up businesses in the US.
And in your article, you talked about, you know, basically, you said Canada needs to become far more pro-business. If you think about what you've experienced so far, is it possible to kind of break that up into tactical stuff, like from Abdullah's story, like the things that make you think that why we need to become more pro-business?
I'll talk from my experience, right? I don't know what other businesses are experiencing, because some people might say Canada is great for businesses, right? So, you know, in specific industries, they might be doing very well. But especially when we first started, right? Let's say funding ideas was very difficult. You know, Canada is very stuck with, you know, real estate, they're amazing. No problem. We'll still give you money. When it comes to something that's not, that just a tiny bit risky, they back off and they don't want to take risks unless you have, like, you know, 20 million guarantees and, you know, you can do this. So I think that stops a lot of businesses from starting.
Welcome back to the Newcomers Podcast, people, where I explore what it means to be an immigrant with immigrants like myself. Today I'm with Abdullah Sherif, who we had an article about him, I would say like 2 months or so ago. And we talked a bit about your journey to coming to Canada, choosing Canada and all that. But why I really wanted to get you on the podcast and have a conversation was because I said, it felt like we compressed things a lot in the article, which was like, we basically just went from, oh, you moved to Canada, you door-to-door salesman, and then you talked a bit about running an agency and then Panda Hub. You know, and I wanted to just say, let's talk through all the little things that happened in between and how you went from door-to-door salesman to Panda Hub co-founder and chief marketing officer today. And I think my first question, I think where I want to kind of kick off with is, door-to-door sales is hard. Like, it's hard. Like, it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Why did you choose that? Like, why?
I'll be honest with you. So when I landed in Canada, I only had $2,000 in my pocket, right? So I had to find a place to stay. And I was very fortunate enough that, you know, there was a guy who had a condo, was kind enough to let me in and, you know, stay at the place and rent the room. But to me, I had to find a job fast. So I was applying a lot on Indeed, jobs with no experiences and whatnot. And, you know, weeks and weeks were passing and there was no interviews. And then eventually this company calls me. They do water filtration systems. So they were hiring for door-to-door sales, because when they hire you, you don't need any experience. And basically they hire everybody, right? It's like, you come through the door. If you sell, we keep you. If not, I mean, you know, you're only paid for commission, like paid for, you know, sales that you actually do. Yeah. So I go there on the first interview. I talk to the guy. He said, what's your sales experience? So I walk him through the, you know, my experience and whatnot. And he said, okay, sounds good. We'll let you know. Then the second day they call me, I go there. It's like a cult, right? So it's like big meetings and about motivation. They ask you what your goals are and they break it down per sale, like, you know, per week, per sale, or you need to sell this amount to make this. So like door-to-door sales, people would understand what I'm talking about. But yeah, I eventually did it for 3 months. I made some money with it, but I didn't see myself continue because there was no growth or there was no end goal. It was just you going out there and door-to-door selling, and the company was not built with the right foundation and the right values, if that makes sense. So I left that, and I started a digital marketing agency because I'm a bit tech-savvy, and something about me that I realize is I can really see opportunities in a different way. Like if I look at a business idea, I can know how it could sell, what to say, and how to sell it, and how to position it. So I saw that. I'm seeing it now more in myself than before, but I always had that edge, like, okay, I know what's going to work, what people would like, and how to solve their problems and whatnot. So, and I was tech savvy, and I knew a lot of businesses, they were not running, let's say, ads, social media marketing properly. So I started doing so, and I onboarded a lot of martial arts studios and fitness studios. I ran their ads. They're very successful. I did that for a year and a half. And then COVID hits, right? And you lose all the clients because everybody in the fitness industry shuts down for 6 months. So, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
You know, so two questions, actually. I think the first one is, because I know when we were talking about the article, you wanted to study medicine.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah.
Forget and that. I'm just like that's such a, that jump is like 10 valleys wide, honestly. Yeah, like, so, like, how did that job, like, I think it's just understanding that job. Like, how did you get there?
Well, to me, I mean, a lot of people struggle with this. A lot of people have credentials. A lot of, you know, doctors are here in Canada who are, you know, they were practicing medicine or they were doctors in other countries. They come here and they cannot do that. So, and it's very unfortunate. So, in my situation, I was in Turkey. I was studying medicine for, I did 2 years of med in Turkey. And in Turkey, there's no, you know, you don't have to do an undergrad and then do an MCAT and then go to medical school. Mm-hmm. Or whether you just go straight to medicine, right? So I did that for 2.5 years. And then I had the opportunity to come to Canada and I took advantage of it, of course, as a Syrian, because, you know, there's no stability for us as Syrian people. For me, but I had to make a decision because if I needed to continue, I would still be studying now. And the path was difficult and was choppy because, first of all, I had to not only will it take too long, but because, okay, so in Turkey, I was what I was studying was medicine. But if I came here, I have to go and take an undergrad in science and then go to med school after I passed the MCAT exam. So the whole situation for me was messed up, and I knew that that's the path that it's going to be too long and I didn't want it to take. And eventually, the change. And unfortunately, a lot of people are in the same situation. They're doctors. Yeah. They're very good doctors.
Yeah.
Could be one of the top doctors in Canada, but they cannot practice.
Yeah. It's...
So...
I mean...
Yeah.
I don't make the regulations. I'm just... I have a lot of very... Not very nice opinions about that process. But again, I also understand that... Or I've come to understand that... These things just take much longer than we want them to take. I know sometimes just untangling all the things that have existed before is much harder. But the sad part is that they're just people's lives in the middle who are stuck and who are frustrated and who are unhappy. And so it's kind of finding that balance. So it's really good to actually see someone like you who kind of says, okay, you know what? I'm going to try find my life somewhere else. And just get some, because this reminds me of a conversation I had with the CEO of TRIEC, Simon. And he talks about how, you know, this thing about immigration, which is like, can you help someone see a career, not a job? And maybe medicine is not a very good example, because medicine is a bit very, very, there's very specific things you need to do to become a doctor. So almost saying someone to go do something else is hard. But I'm just kind of generalizing right now that a lot of times, when someone comes, it's like, okay, back home, I was doing A, B, C, D, E, which means I had certain skills. And what other careers exist in Canada that I can take down my skill set and go do? You know, just like for you, like, okay, I think I understand. I've enjoyed playing around with tech. I can understand what position, how to position something. Oh, let me go try digital marketing. You know, and then you go do that. And which is that thing about, hey, I want to build a career. Because a lot of people get stuck in that, okay, I used to be this. And this is who I want to be, you know, that sort of thing. The other question I was going to ask was, even though you made that call to change, did you ever regret it at all? Especially like when COVID hit, when that door-to-door sales hit, like, did you ever go like, should I have gone back to this medicine thing? Or it was like, head ahead?
Honestly, I wouldn't say that I regret my decisions. To me, I'm a type of person, okay, if those are the cards that I'm dealt, I'm just going to play them the best as I can. So I didn't regret my decision. And I do think everything happens for a reason. And I think it's just a path that everyone takes. I mean, no one has a perfectly aligned, you know, life, you know, where nothing wrong happens. I think everybody has a specific journey. It's just different for each one.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I would regret my decision to not go back to medicine. I mean, I just had to do what I had to do, right? The challenge comes up. There's two things you can do. You can react to it or you can act on it. So to me, I have to act on it. That's just the type of person I am. So so how can I go beyond it? How can I go around it? So I mean, there's nothing I can do. I cannot stop, right? So
that's Yeah, man. Like, you know, I had this friend I was talking to yesterday. They're going through a pretty hard time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish I could get someone else to just kind of to say to them what you were just saying. Because this is what I was saying to them yesterday. Is like, you already did the hard thing of just moving here. Like, that is a very hard thing to just come here and start your life again. And you could do two things. You can sit down and wallow in self-pity, you know, and I understand if you do that. Or you can be like, you know what? These are the cards I'm dealt with. I'm just going to start showing up every single day and find my way through the muck, you know, and just sort of know that it might take much longer, but I'll get it done. Like, you know, because it feels like...
Yeah, honestly. I completely get that. But for some people, it's more difficult than others. And especially with people that are coming here with families and kids.
Yes,
it tends to be very difficult, but I do think I had, you know, an easier path just because I was in my 20s, I was young, so you know, we can adapt very quickly. But yeah, people that come here with families and kids and whatnot, it's definitely harder to adapt. But yeah, I can see that why people can, you know, have like self pity and then feel bad. But again, if you're going to a new country, you should expect a change. You should expect something. You have to change something. You can't just do the same things you were doing in, you know, the country where you came from. So it's just a different culture, different country, different things to do.
Yeah, I think that because like I moved here with a wife and a kid, and like it was tough in a way. And I was, but I think I still say I'm one of the lucky immigrants. But I do think that I think one thing is people don't fully understand how hard it is to immigrate before they immigrate. People usually underestimate that. Like, I mean,
it's like, oh, you just showed up. Oh,
what? Yeah, exactly.
They don't know. They don't know what we had to go through.
Yeah, people do that. Like people do that. And I think one of the weakness of the human species is until we experience it more often than not, we don't really believe it most of the time. A lot of us don't have this ability to listen to something and be like, that could also happen to me and plan for it.
Yeah.
We always think that we might be different. But I want to get back to where we are, which is, you did say this about like basically the sales job taught you rejection, discipline, how to connect with people and all that. And then you went on to do the gym, the agency that was helping with the gym people, and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
Any of those lessons come in handy during that period where basically you're asking yourself, okay, what next? Like, what's going to happen next? Everyone is at home, and
honestly, that's funny that you say that. I was actually outside my house more during COVID than before COVID, so. Yeah, that's interesting. It's just like, okay, so everyone's at home. I've got to get out to do something. And I realized that cleaning services or detailing, it's an essential service.
Yeah.
So I knew that if I started that, it won't be an issue, right? And people need cleaning services, especially at the beginning where everyone was freaked out. They want their car, you know, to get clean, sanitized and whatnot. So that was a big factor. So I just went ahead and okay, let's do this. Let's start that. So,
are you serious? wait, that's how Pornhub just started. Like, you know, we'll sanitize cars and all that stuff.
Well, before I had a, okay. So I started using myself. Okay. With a different partner. We did that for 6 months, I would say. We got a shop and whatnot. And then I met Reza through, I was doing marketing and he reached out and it just clicked and he wanted the same vision as well. So this is how Panda evolved was after the fact that I had a detailing business for 6 months. So I knew the ins and outs. I learned everything about the industry from A to Z. You know, what detailers think about, how they approach things, what their mentality is, and even the customer as well. So, you know, having domain expertise is very important if you want to excel in a specific industry. So, yeah, it came by when, you know, Panda Hub came by when he reached out and he said that he had the same vision and whatnot, and he wants to take this nationwide. And we talked, we had a meeting, and we were on the same page, and, you know, started slowly from 2020, I think, till, yeah, 2020 till now, 2025. So it's been 5 years.
How did the name Panda Hub, like, why Panda Hub? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, everyone asking me this question. Well, I was at Reza's place, and he had a panda mascot, like the big, those mascot that people wear. So, yeah, and we didn't want to choose a name that's related to detailing, because we knew we wanted to build something that's going to go beyond that, because eventually we're going to add tire change and, you know, finding car washes and, you know, oil, anything basically car services that you want to book, you can do through Panda Hub. Okay. And we want to make sure that you get the best experience and the best value and a trusted, you know, you can find a trusted service provider at Panda Hub. So we knew we wanted to do that. And we didn't want to choose a name that, you know, has detailing in it. So we were thinking, like, you know, I don't know, Google, Apple, Facebook, all those like one name, two name companies that are not tied to the services that they do. Yeah. And we wanted to go with Panda, I think Panda Cleaning and Co. But that name was taken because we were on the phone with the lawyer and she said, okay, there's, you know, Panda Hub available. Okay, so Panda makes sense, Hub and Panda. So because it's a hub for cars, let's say. And we just chose this name and we registered it. So, yeah, we didn't think too much of it. We were just like, okay, let's choose a name that's universal and, you know, can you know, be there.
I like that, actually, because, you know, this is the people say about, I think as entrepreneurs, we sometimes we obsess so much about the name. I mean, yeah, if you can get a good name that's catchy, that's great. And, you know, and if you can get all the two-syllable, I mean, I've heard people say, or make it a two-syllable, like Panda, you know, that kind of thing. Like, just make it two syllables and non-stop, because it's easy to remember and recall. But I also continue.
You know what's interesting? The name doesn't matter, right? The name of the company doesn't matter. You can choose any name that you want. What matters most is the clarity of your offering or your service or the product you're selling. You know, you can have a random name, but if you get too creative with what you're selling, like you want to name it something special, people will be confused. Like, for example, naming services or naming packages or naming products. Like, don't try to, I don't know, if you're selling a commodity, don't try to, you know, come up with like a very unique name, because people will be a little bit confused of that. So, but the name of the company, you can do whatever you want, but make sure that the message that you want the customers to understand, make sure it's clear what you're selling, the service or product, because people don't want to think, they don't want to get confused. So, but yeah, name, we knew it wasn't going to be a big deal for us.
Yeah, I agree. Because really, the name is really, I feel like names are like boxes. And then all the work you do, you know, like you say, be clear about the service you provide, your products, all the marketing, everything now just kind of goes into that box. That's the name. And then people will hear that name and be like, oh, it's Abdullah and Reza and the team that run this business called Panda Hub. Because people will be like, oh, I want a cool name. Yes, like, it would be good to get
Apple. A cool name is nice, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be good to get Apple. Like, I mean, Apple is so cool. Like, you know, but if you can't, just get something good and move and do the work. So now, 5 years.
5 years go by,
If you look back then and now, did you see all that you're doing right now? I mean, I know you said this stuff about services and stuff, but if you look back at 2020 when you and Reza were trying to start and stuff, and you see all you guys have gone through right now, one, did you see everything? Like, did you imagine you'll be here in 5 years' time? Because I think you guys have grown really fast, honestly.
We grew fast, you know, to me, because it's very hard to imagine where you would land in 5 years. You definitely need to have goals.
Yeah.
But to me, I see it in a way where you know, okay, so I have this opportunity. How can I extract it as much as I can? Like, what's the best possible scenario for that? And thinking about it and imagining it is not gonna, it's not gonna do anything. You have to actively do it. So to me, I knew that we needed to do quote unquote work, or we need to do, you know, something, take action for us to be at the position where we are now. So to me, I don't really look, I was like, okay, oh, I haven't thought I was gonna be here. I thought I'm gonna be a little bit less growth. No, I just go ahead, what's in front of us? What are the opportunities? Is there something that we're missing? If so, let's add it, and then let's just go full force. That's, you know, they say the pedal to the metal, just go full force, and wherever you land, right? So, like, don't let anything, because some people, if they put, like, I get why people put goals, and that's important because they want to, you know, achieve something. But to me, maybe I'm, you know, it's different for me. I just like to extract the opportunity that I have as much as I can. And this would kind of guarantee me to land the furthest that I can, right? So that's how I look at things.
That's so, an interesting way to think of it.
But looking at it now, it's like, I'm very grateful for where we are now, but I think there's still a long way to go. There's still more opportunity to extract. So yeah, that's how I approach it. I don't really spend too much time looking back and, okay, I feel that we didn't do anything yet, so which is very odd. Yeah, like, oh shit, I did all that, but no, there's still more to do. So I think it's just a mentality.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, like, there are a lot of ideas colliding there. First of all,
yeah,
which is that thing you say about opportunity to extract is a really good way to step out of this scorekeeping mentality. Because as an entrepreneur, it's so easy to get caught up in the scorekeeping mentality, which is where goals lead to, you know, which is that, oh, I want to make X amount of money by this time. I want to do this. But I really like that framework of just saying to yourself, okay, this is an opportunity. So how can I extract as much possible value from this opportunity? And to do that, I have to do the work. But then the part where it kind of collides for me is when you say, okay, we've not done anything. Because, like, you guys have done stuff.
No, we've done stuff. But to me, it's like, okay, we've done a lot, but there's still a lot to go.
To be done.
Because I think once you're in the trenches, it's very... And I think that's why. Because once you're in the trenches, you don't see what you have done. Like, you can't see the road back. So you're just looking ahead in front of you. And I think once we get in the position where we have, let's say, I don't know, a big exit, whether we IPO or sell to a big company, then I might sit back and relax and, you know, reflect of on what have we done. And that's how it is.
If you think about it, you know, you said this thing which I found interesting, which is you've not done business anywhere else. So you started running a business in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I agree and disagree to some extent.
Okay. That's
cool. So I agree to start there. There's that. But I also think that, there's a basal level of home that is probably in you that we don't always understand. It's just like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, there are things that are guiding you that are things you learn from either watching your dad or your mom and uncle or people around you who run businesses at that point in time. So I do think there's that. And I'm wondering, now that I'm asking you this question, if you reflect on that, on this thing I'm just raising right now, and think about how you've approached building this thing over these past 5 years, I guess something, because we'll get to this point where we'll still get to this question. This part is like, you're building in Canada, but you still say, okay, but we do things a bit slower here. And I'm wondering, where is that coming from? What's driving that? Like, what's driving the US expansion, for example? Like, what all the things? Because you, if it was just Canadian way of doing business that you didn't know any, you just, oh, this is here and this is all I know. I don't know if you
No, I see your point. I guess if I grew up here, it would be a little bit different, right? Because life is I don't know, slow here maybe. I don't know. I didn't grow up here, so I wouldn't be the person to talk about it.
Yeah.
I came to Canada in 2018. Now, I think naturally, right? Entrepreneurs have a sense of urgency always and a sense of achievement and, you know, a sense of thinking big. And that's was with me the whole time. Now, I wouldn't be able to comment on whether I've learned something from home, you know, in regards to building businesses, because I didn't really go that deep. You know, people around me, like, I was in school, right? So, like, I was not really around people talking to them about business. We were talking about, I don't know, let's go out, let's play FIFA or something. So, it wasn't talks about business, but it was in the back of my head. In Turkey, those conversations started to happen. I wanted to do something in Turkey, but of course, you know, language barrier, and I was studying medicine, so, you know, it was not gonna go anywhere because I was already in school. But when I came to Canada, as anybody else, you envision Canada as similar to the U.S. So you would think Canada and U.S. are the same, so they're both fast. And then, because that's what people understand of North America, especially U.S. and Canada, not Mexico. So you understand that, okay, you know, big companies are there, things move fast, economy is big. So that was the idea that I came into Canada thinking about. So I assume that, you know, Canada's fast, but then I realize it's not as fast anymore. And I think with the rise of social media and, you know, YouTube and podcasts and people, you know, I think you can see the other side of things. And because you're close to the US, look at these big companies, like, you know, Airbnb and those big marketplaces, look at what they're doing and how fast they grew. So I was looking at these companies and I knew they were all US companies. So I knew there's not a lot in Canada. There's only Shopify that I know of. It's a big tech company. I don't know any other company. But in the U.S., I can count you a lot of tech companies that are big, that are global. So I started to, you know, look at the U.S. more than I'm looking at where I am now. Because if I focus on Canada, my vision would be much less than if I were just looking at the U.S. And I think this is where it came from. Right. But I think I do think naturally entrepreneurs have the sense of urgency and sense of growth. And especially at a young age, right? You know, in your 20s, you're like a sponge. I mean, you're adapt to your environment. And my environment was just, okay, I'm by myself here. I need to do something. And, you know, ambition, I was ambitious and I was looking at, you know, different people, how they, you know, are successful, different companies. And, you know, you start to adopt that. But if you grew up back home till maybe, because they say that your frontal lobe develops when you're 25, 26. So I think if you developed a certain mentality back home and you come here and you try to change that, that would be difficult. But I'm very grateful that I came to Canada in my 20s because I was very adaptable to whatever, you know, I wanted to go. And I knew that I wanted to go that approach. I'm like, okay, I can quickly adapt to that. And it wasn't going to be that difficult.
Fair. Fair enough, in a way, you know. The sad part is just the Canada US thing. I always think about it a lot. Yeah. I mean, I wish we had a much bigger market here. Before we get to talking about Canada itself in much more detail, if you think back, like, what are the biggest lessons you've learned so far this past 5 years?
Biggest lesson so far. I mean, this is a common one. The more you know, the more that you realize you don't know. That's very important. You need to always be learning, right? Knowledge is very important. I would say don't, and that's a tough one. People might not like this one. I would say don't celebrate success too early. A lot of people, they celebrate success. Okay, we have achieved this or we've achieved that, so... if that was the end goal, then that's great. But if you celebrate way too much, I think you trick your brain. You know, there's going to be a dopamine release that, okay, I've already made it. So you're not going to take more action afterwards. So try to, you know, not celebrate as much as you can. It's just like with an NBA team, right? You make it to the playoffs and they throw a big party, they celebrate. They'll get comfortable because they think they made it. But they didn't win the championship. So I think that's very important. That's a big lesson that I learned. I see a lot of people, they celebrate and, you know, that's it for them. So to me, only celebrate the big win that you wanted in life. If your big win is to, I don't know, a certain thing and you achieve that, then there you go. But if you celebrate way too much those ones in between, I think that is I would say not good. It was, maybe it will slow you down a little bit. So that's, I would say, the second thing. The third thing, I would say, just be truthful and be honest in business. I think a lot of people like that. And it's important to have, even though sometimes it's not the best thing to do. But I think being honest will go the long way and it will benefit you in the long term. Also, you don't have to remember what you lied about. And that's something that people struggle with. Someone tells me something and they're lying. And then some other day they tell me something else. They didn't realize that they told me something else the first time.
Yeah.
So if you lie, you're going to forget what you lied about, which is going to make it more difficult. So I just be honest, man, in the beginning. This is the third thing. You asked me two more things. Let me think about it. Big lessons I've learned. What I would add to this, actually, those are the three big lessons.
That's
I would
okay.
say.
Yeah,
I can't think about two more. If I think about two more, I'll say it.
That's okay. I think the only thing I was going to add to what you were saying was, first of all, about lying, is that one reason why you shouldn't lie, I think, is that if you lie too much to people, I think your brain doesn't have it's something you learn. As your brain doesn't know how to separate between when you're lying to yourself and when you're lying to others.
Yeah.
So when you lie
to people, we're very bad at lying.
Yeah, you also start to lie to yourself, and which is really bad. And you can get into some really... So you don't tell yourself the truth about yourself because your brain doesn't have what they call typeface. It can't separate between what you're saying to Abdullah and what I'm saying to myself. I'm talking, and it's just taking all that in. Then the other thing I was going to add is that I read somewhere that entrepreneurship teaches you to be in... So about your point about not celebrating too much. When you're building a business, you get to this point where you are this middle, you stay at the middle because you're never too low, you're never too high. Because literally you've seen a lot of downs and you've seen a lot of ups. And so the best entrepreneurs somehow find a way to just stay in the middle because they know that you can be up today and tomorrow something happens and you're back ground zero. And then you keep going up again. So they don't celebrate too much. They also don't cry about failure too much because they know it can change. You just need to just keep going, that point you make about that.
Yeah. And I think that's another part I would say that, when it's like a very good day, okay, I'm happy, but I'm not going to be, super happy. But if it's a bad day, also I'm not going to feel that bad. I'm just like, it is what it is. I just got to
keep
going. So I think I do agree with that middle point because, good days are going to be very, some days are going to be very good. Some days are going to be very bad. And if you let your emotion be tied to that, it's going to be a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now to Canada.
Yeah.
You all keep opening up businesses in the US.
Yeah.
And in your article, you talked about, basically, you said Canada needs to become far more pro-business. If you think about what you've experienced so far, is it possible to kind of break that up into tactical stuff, like from Abdullah's story, like the things that make you think that, why we need to become more pro-business?
Okay, I'll talk from my experience, right? Fair. I don't know what other businesses are experiencing because some people might say Canada is great for businesses, right? So, in specific industries, they might be doing very well. But especially when we first started, right? Let's say funding ideas was very difficult. Canada is very stuck with, real estate, they're amazing. No problem. Real estate will give you money. When it comes to something that's not, that just a tiny bit risky, they back off and they don't want to take risks unless you have 20 million guarantees and, you can do this. So I think that stops a lot of businesses from starting. Also, another thing that we've experienced, me and Reza, because Reza deals with that more, is VCs, Canadian VCs. Canadian VCs are very small-minded. They're very slow. And they're just... for lack of a better word, not good. Not the same as the US. Like, they don't understand markets that much. And I think a lot of them are complacent, right? They think they know what they're doing, but they don't. I'm talking about the majority, not everybody, but some of them, like, you just can't feel, like, you can't really see the opportunity. Like, you're like, they have like a checkbox of thing they want to try to check it. If it doesn't check one thing, it's gone. But they don't know that, you know, things can be different, right? Yeah. So just because it happened in the past in a certain way doesn't mean it's going to repeat itself the same way, but it's a little bit different. I don't know if I explained it properly, but they do take risks on something that's more stupid with no revenues, with nothing. So it's just crazy to me how they think. So that's part of it too. VCs, you know, funding businesses, that's definitely a struggle here. Then the US VCs are much better, much understanding. They want you to think big. They want you to grow. They're more risk averse. And I think from another factor I would say in Canada is they're very risk averse. They don't like to take the tiniest risks. And I think in business to succeed, you have to take risks. I think that's one, a fourth lesson I want to say. You have to take risks. If you don't take risks, you're not gonna go where you want to go. You will fail, that's fine, but you can always keep moving forward. And I think Canada is very risk averse. They don't want to, you know, take risks. What if? To me, I just say, okay, there's a wall, just go through it. If I fall, okay, I'll get it back up and keep moving. Because if you don't take risks, you're not gonna go anywhere. Because other people are risk averse, and if you're the one taking the risk, then you can definitely succeed. So yeah, I would say they're very risk averse. That's a big, big factor in Canada.
I wonder if, you know, I mean, going back to what we were talking in the pre-show before we started recording about market sizes,
yeah,
population size. But I started thinking also, as you just said, I was like, I wonder if it's also a function of the kind of economy we're coming from.
Yeah.
Which is, and also
the buying power in the US is much better.
It's much more, it's much more better. Yeah. That's that. Mm-hmm. But there's also, when you have people who have made money from certain kind of things, mm-hmm. farming, mining, oil, groceries of recent.
Yeah, these are
I wonder if that kind of economic building power mentality means that our VCs themselves are also beholden to that thing. Because I mean, you're not the first person to say this, honestly. Yeah. You're not the first person to talk about how raising in the US is much easier. They're much more open. I mean, we could also talk about the grant system that, like, it's good, but sometimes it feels like there are more grants than VCs, and then grants come with things that are not exactly very great for the businesses themselves. Like, there's just a ton of things, and I'm just wondering whether it's all part of a mix of how did we make money as a country before? Because I think we used to be a mercantile country, to be honest. Like, we were mostly farmers and merchants and minesmen and stuff. And then all of a sudden you have all these kids roaming around saying, hey, come fund me because I want to build XYZ. And the guy's like, hey, I fund guys who have land, you know, and which is also probably why real estate is much easier for them to put money, because real estate is like, oh, I know that he has the building permit and he has the land, and I can always come back and seize the house if he doesn't pay, if he doesn't raise the money.
Yeah, there you go.
But if you say, Canada, I don't know, gosh. Sorry, you think Canada is what? Sorry, yeah, continue.
Yeah, I think that's like, I'll be honest with you, I didn't really read too much history about Canada, how they made their money, but you're saying that it's a lot of mining and farming and real estate, which I understand that, but that's slow growth, right? I mean, what's the average you can make from real estate? I don't know, 12% on a good year. You see the US, you know, inventions, innovations, always from the US. Why? Because they're willing to take a little bit more risk. Yes, there's more failures, but on the long term, they'll succeed more as a country than us. I think if we stay the same way we are, we're going to be left behind eventually. Because look at China, man. China is Middle East too. I grew up in Saudi. They're moving very quick. They're moving very fast. Look at Europe. What's happening to it? You know, for the past 10, 20 years, I mean,
Europe is Europe. I mean, there's nothing there. I mean, economy is bad, no innovation, very risk averse, you know, like not a lot of ambition, and then you'll die off eventually. So yeah, I think Canada will go the same route if we keep doing what we're doing and we're not really innovating and really wanting to succeed and be pioneers in certain industries. So
yeah. I mean, I do think we have some hard conversations as a country to have, because one, the world is changing.
Yeah.
You know, the world is changing seriously. Like it's not the world it used to be. The other part is obvious that right now we don't have, the US isn't exactly what it used to be for Canada, right? And the ramifications, I don't even know what all the ramifications are of what has happened in the past 2 years, what it means for the future for the country.
Right.
And, you know, and so it means we need to have some very hard conversations, or like you said, at some point we'll look back on this time and be like, we missed an opportunity to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also the one thing that I told you as well, that a lot of these politicians and people in charge, they'll get there. They'll make sure that, you know, they take care of themselves and their families, and, you know, if the country goes down with it, then might as well. So they're very selfish. I think that's the word. It's very selfish. You know, they come in, they make their buddies rich and themselves rich, and okay, they have the money. Okay, I'll step down. But they don't know that they affected millions and millions of people. And they stopped, I don't know, innovation, or stopped the country from becoming better. So I think there's a lot of selfishness, and they say they don't do something, but they say something else. So I think it starts from up top, the leadership. The leadership's not there. Yeah. Leadership is not there. I mean, you can see what happens to countries when there's a certain amount of leadership. I mean, look what happened to El Salvador. Now it's one of the safest countries in South America. Why? Because he decided to do something, and it's for the people. Because he could have, again, I don't know what the, you know, politics there are, but he could have, you know, took money from, I don't know, the cartel and made himself money. But he said, no, you guys are all going to jail. We're going to lock you all, guys all up. And he made it for the people. That's why he has 80% voting rate, or 80% or more. So, you know, that's a good leader for that, you know, certain part. So if you look at, you know, in the Middle East, right? The leaders over there, they want their country to thrive and evolve and become pioneers in certain industries. Lots of fundings in different aspects. They're growing very much. They're building stuff. They're doing stuff. So it all comes down from leadership. Now look at Trump now. So, I mean, a lot of people hate Trump. A lot of people like Trump, but he is trying to be, you know, pro-US, right? He's trying to, you know, make the country great again, let's say. Yes, there's a lot of, you know, things behind the curtains, but he already has money, right? And I think that's part of it too. I mean, the guy's is a billionaire. He doesn't care about money. He already has money. He wants to build a legacy, and he wants to build, you know, that I make, you know, US great again. And we don't have that character in Canada yet. So I think that's part of it, maybe.
I mean, some people would argue with you that they still think Trump has a lot of issues despite the fact that he has money. And I mean, because there's some people who argue otherwise with you about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always arguments about politics. So you can't agree with everyone in politics. That's impossible. Yeah.
We're kind of rounding up here. And one thing I want to understand is, now, despite all this, you know, despite all what you've said about Canada and stuff, I mean, I know you all are growing fast in the States, which is interesting. How long do you think we have you in Canada before you get out?
Honestly, I would say, I mean, okay, so one thing that I give Canada, there's some good programs. I'm not sure if, you know, people in tech would understand what I'm saying, but there's Shred. Shred is very good for Canadian tech companies because they give you back the money that you pay for employees that are software developers, which is great. So there's some good incentives in Canada that are not present in the US. Now, talent is cheaper a little bit here than the US, but US you get better talent. So I would, to answer the question, I wouldn't say that I'm like, it's not like something I'm planning to leave. I still didn't get to that process yet.
Okay.
So I would say if, you know, something might happen in the next couple of weeks, I'm like, you know what? Okay, we got to move to the U.S. But as of now, I'm here. And I don't think I'm moving anytime soon, for at least maybe a year, I would say. And then eventually we...
Yeah, it's not soon, Abdullah.
Yeah. To me, that's not soon.
Yeah, like 12 months. But it just, I mean, I saw you early September. So, okay, yeah. But that's 2 months gone already. Yeah. Like, almost 2 months
that's
gone
crazy.
Already.
That's
good. Yeah, so that's why I say, yeah. Yeah, time flies as an adult. So.
Yeah, time flies. Yeah, I would say maybe, I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know. We haven't started the process. Okay, you know what? We need to start the process in the U.S. Let's look for how we can move there. We haven't started that yet. So I wouldn't say I'm moving anytime soon.
5 years. I know you don't talk about goals a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's year 10 going to look like for Panda Hub?
Year 10. Okay. Well, we do have goals. I just don't really get stuck to them too much, because people get stuck on the goals and they think they made it. The next 5 years, I would say we are the biggest marketplace for car care. We are in US and Canada, potentially some countries in Europe like UK and also Australia as well, the big four English speaking countries. We have different services and we are either close to IPO or close to a big exit. So we're like the Airbnb of car care. That's I would say the next 5 years, and it's very achievable, I think. I mean, what we've done the past 5 years is amazing, and I think what we'll do the next five is gonna even be better, because we do have the data that we see what we did, and now we know what we can do. So
yeah. So here's to the Airbnb of car care,
or Uber of car care. Yeah,
I like that idea actually.
Because Airbnb is a booking platform, Uber is on. We're not on schedule based.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. So that's the difference. That's true. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You have it. Absolutely. I was very, very happy to be on the podcast today.
Thank you. I mean, I'm honored that I'm your first podcaster.
It was my first podcast. So there you go.
Thank you so much, everyone. There you have it. That's Abdullah. As always, please, if you found this useful, send to someone who's going to enjoy it. If you know someone like Abdullah I should talk to, send them my way. We're on Substack, YouTube, anywhere you find your podcast, you can find the story on there. Peace out.